With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. This is the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hey, good to have you with us. Haven't spoken about climate change for some time, only because we've been absolutely railroaded by censorship, by Islamic violence, by what's going on in Gaza, etc. And I will get, by the way, to Shane Healey very shortly and talk about aspects of this peace deal, which is on the table at the moment. And there's a distinct possibility it may actually grab a signature from both sides. We will see. But on climate change, it's interesting. I've had Steve Malloy on this program a couple of times in the last 18 months. And he talks about some statistics we have for April of 2024. And he says, this is very embarrassing for the climate hoax. Now, let me open what he's had to post on X in the last 24 hours. He says, as of April 28, 2024, there has been more than 1 degree Fahrenheit cooler temperatures than April 1981 in the United States, despite 43 years of emissions. That would be approximately 1.5 trillion tons of emissions and much added urban heat island effects as well. Let me repeat that figure. 28th of April, 2024, more than 1 degree Fahrenheit cooler than April 1981. If every emission warms the planet, what happened in the month of April? Just a little bit of food for thought. Qantas customers have been left reeling after an issue with the airline's app gave passengers access to the personal information of other people, prompting concerns over a data breach. Oh, dear. This is Optus-like. After logging into the Qantas app on Wednesday, customers were shown the wrong account details, including the person's boarding pass, frequent flyer point score, and status tier. Qantas issued an apology over the blunder and said the problem was a technical issue and not a cyber security incident, so it wasn't a hack. Now, the same thing can't be said for what was a major hack. Let me get to this story very quickly. As you may have been reading or hearing on our news, New South Wales police are working to have a website publishing the data of 1 million people who visited popular pubs and clubs across the state of New South Wales taken down as part of an investigation into those behind are responsible for the data breach. Now, this is cyber hack. Addresses, signatures, dates of birth, phone numbers, and even driver's license photographs collected by Australian-based tech company Outerbox. That's Outerbox, who create gaming and hospitality products, are believed to have been shared with a third-party overseas contractor. It has led to some of the crucial personal data being posted online at haveibeenoutofboxed.com in a major cyber leak. It's being published on haveibeenoutofboxed.com. Police sources said they had been aware of the leak late on Tuesday evening after Outerbox reported the breach to the federal government with a priority for detectives in the immediate term to have the website taken down. Now, the affected venues listed on haveibeenoutofbox.com included Breakers Country Club in Wombril, Bulladealer Bowling Club, Central Coast Leagues Club, Mex Club in Mayfield, the City of Sydney RSL, East Cessnock Bowling Club, Fairfield RSL, Gwendolyn Bowling Club, Halekulani Bowling Club in Budgieboy, Ingleburn RSL Club, Club Old Bar, Club Terrigal, West Tradies in Durrick, the Diggers Club, Hornsby RSL Club, Merivale, the Tradies in Dixon and Erindale Vikings. So there you go. Outerbox, who handles all of that personal data, hasn't been handling it so well. This is Chris Smith on TNT.
Keeping the commitment 24-7.
I come to you for facts. I really appreciate what you and your team do.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, how close are we to a ceasefire in Gaza? I want to get to Shane Healey, who's worked in the Australian Army as an intelligence officer and trainer, and as a private military contractor as well. He was deployed twice to Afghanistan as part of Task Force 66. And when in Australia, he was part of the Tactical Assault Group. He now works for both government and private firms in the area of threat assessment, often related to both suspects and those convicted of terror crimes. Shane Healy, good to have you back.
Good afternoon, Chris. How are you going?
I'm doing very well, mate. Ceasefire deal on the table. Given the details, it sounds as if all the hostages will not be released at the get-go if this is passed. Who does it kind of favour, do you think?
So the hostages are asking for what have previously been termed the humanitarian, so elderly people, women and children. There's about 33, I think, at the moment they're seeking. Israel wanted 40. Hamas initially offered 20. They've settled on around 33.
Right.
So this is one of the negotiation points. Both sides seem optimistic. We've seen that in the past. But the big sticking point for Hamas is the total removal of all Israeli troops out of Gaza. I don't think that's going to happen.
So this is a sticking point that they won't budge on at this stage. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. And this is what undid the previous negotiations a few weeks ago. Hamas want the war over. They want all Israeli troops out. They want to start rebuilding Gaza. Israeli forces and especially Netanyahu don't trust Hamas still. I don't blame them. And I think this will be the major sticking point. What will security look like inside of Gaza during the ceasefire and then in the long term?
So in many ways, it goes back to what has been essentially the chief sticking point for Gaza all along, even before this conflict, which is the occupation of the area by the Israelis.
Yeah, 100%. And one of the issues that it gets glossed over sometimes is the Egyptians don't want to help in this. You know, they essentially gave it to Israel a number of years ago to look after. So someone's got to do it because of the trust issues. It's going to take a third party to step up, or the US to basically do it themselves, which I don't think they've got any political will to do themselves. But someone's going to have to guarantee security both inside of Gaza and of the Israeli people.
And meanwhile, as these negotiations continue, Benjamin Netanyahu seems intent on remaining very aggressive. Does his aggression threaten or encourage a possible deal?
It's the major sticking point. We've discussed this for a number of weeks now. He's not just fighting for the protection of the Israeli people and their state. He's fighting for his political life and for his freedom. He's under fraud charges in Israel. So in my assessment, he's the biggest sticking point to any ceasefire and peace negotiations in Gaza currently.
Well, let's put it very pointedly. Does he want a ceasefire and does he want the end of this conflict, or is it in his interest to continue the conflict?
It is 100% in his personal interest to continue this conflict.
Yeah. I want to talk about the criminal charges at length, if I can, with you, Shane. He was offered a deal by the boss of a powerful Israeli newspaper in 2014. It was recorded on a very rough audio recording from a pocket. There was a suggestion there from the newspaper proprietor that the law be changed to favour his newspaper, and then the paper will keep Netanyahu in power. It was from a tape dating back, as I say, to 2014. What do we know happened there? And was it a case of Netanyahu agreeing to accept the deal?
So the other person in that conversation who recorded it, Noni Moses, his family's essentially the Murdochs of Israel. They had the most successful and still have one of the most successful papers in Israel. A very strong American supporter of Netanyahu started his own paper in Israel that he made for free. This gave Netanyahu the ability to rebuild his reputation and get his ideology and his political points across for free. It's now overtaken as the most read paper in Israel. What Noni Moses was trying to do is there was a bill before the parliament that it was going to be illegal to give a free newspaper away. Mm-hmm. That then made it both papers were on equal footing. It'd be like The Daily Telegraph starts giving it away for free, and the Sydney Morning Herald or the Australian complaining that it's unfair for their consumers.
Yep.
What the agreement was if that bill went forward and the all papers had to be bought, they would stop writing negative stories against Netanyahu in Noni Moses' paper. And that's the corruption, because if you listen to the audio and what Netanyahu is being accused of, he agreed to it. And that's the point of contention and what Netanyahu is being charged with in the Israeli courts.
Okay, but having said that, the way it's turned out has indicated that he didn't follow through with the deal.
That is correct. Yeah. But does that make it legal, illegal? I guess that's what's before the Israeli courts. Again, it's Noni Moses, like I said, he's like the Rupert Murdoch of Israel. So he's got a lot of influence, got a lot of money, got a lot of a power in that country. And so his supporters aren't going down swinging. And Netanyahu's not a popular person anyway to start with. And he's getting more unpopular by the day through the Israeli conflict, which is why I go back and say he's got the most to lose with any ceasefire.
Now, knowing you as the intelligence officer you once were, you'd be interested to know how this particular conversation was recorded. How was it? Who did it?
Noni Moses had the recording in his pocket. But I find it, given his resources, access to people in the security industry, that he didn't have a better recording system. Because it is very grainy and there are large parts that are inaudible. You could have done it much better. I guess he was worried that he would have got caught. There's always a heightened level of anxiety and fear when you're doing this if you're not trained to do it. So I get all that. Maybe he it was a last-minute idea and he just put the dictaphone in his pocket. It's something that I think one of the old famous ones was leave your briefcase in a meeting room. When you leave a recorder in it, come back 5 minutes later and see what they're saying behind your back in the meeting room. This kind of corporate espionage isn't new.
So if Netanyahu were to continue or do what he could to continue the conflict in Gaza, say, for 5 years, during that period, Netanyahu can't stand trial, can he?
Yeah, that's correct. And by enabling war powers in Israel, I don't even think they can have elections, which is one of the things they're saying now, because they're at a war footing. He's at a war council. They don't like running elections when you've got national service. You've got a lot of the Israeli populace in the military. So I think, again, that's why it suits him to have a war in Gaza.
And the one thing that you'd expect him not to agree with would to be remove troops from Gaza, because that invites Hamas back. And then what has been achieved since October 7 is for nothing in his eyes.
Yeah. And I did read a report and I actually put a bit of credibility into it, that Shin Bennett stopped looking and taking some of the reporting of Hamas doing their training for the 7th October attack. There is a suggestion that Netanyahu allowed that to take place. So when they call it intelligence failure, there is some voices inside of Israel to say it wasn't so much a failure as a deliberate attempt, because this is like we're discussing, suiting Netanyahu, and he's very hard right. His family's very well known in the Israeli military, the Israeli Secret Service, and this is his constituency. And this is his always been his play, is that strong Israel on the front foot in a wartime scenario.
Okay. While this is all going on, behind the scenes, we've got the International Crime Court doing its business. I want to ask you about that, if I may, after a quick break. We'll do that right now here at TNT.
TNT's Pella Nuroff-Taylor.
Paint a picture of this, what it would look like. In its various aspects, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, look, it's not too hard to recognize. We can see what's going on in China, and the same exact way social credit surveillance, biometric tracking, facial scans, fingerprints, iris scans. All this is exactly what we're talking about. Drones, surveillance from the sky. You know, this is the kind of stuff that which most Americans may not be aware is already on your doorstep. It's already on the cameras in your stoplights. I mean, this stuff is everywhere. I'm not to suggest that those are iris scans in your stoplights, but surveillance, broad surveillance that has now begun to step into that. And so this is now something that we need to connect to immediately what's happening in our lives. And what we're talking about on the border is a both-way conversation. And this has been very public, right? That you, this is for Americans going out, Americans coming in, or legal immigrants going out, coming in, or illegal immigrants. And all of that's going to be tracking things that we should have a right to have a say in.
Pella Nuroff-Taylor on today's News Talk, TNT.
In a democracy, the majority vote rules. But in most democracies, you can only vote for change every 3 or 4 years. To understand what people want, governments and political parties use focus groups. These focus groups can include as little as 20 people. Australia is a country of over 25 million people. Does making decisions based on 20 people sound fair to you? Have your say. Be heard in between elections. Download the For My Say app now. That is number 4, My Say.
Listen, we gotta talk.
It's what we do best.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We will get you a news update in about 10 minutes from now, but first let's get back to Shane Healey, the former ADF intelligence officer, bubbling along behind this war in Gaza as we wait with bated breath for some kind of resolution for a ceasefire, is the work of the International Crime Court. What kind of real threat does the court pose to Israel, do you think, Shane?
Well, internally, nothing, but it could limit their international travel because technically, once you've got a warrant, an arrest warrant on you, you can be arrested in any other country. Vladimir Putin's currently got this, so technically, if he traveled outside of Russia, he could be arrested. So, but there's no international police force that then goes and knocks on your door and arrests you. So it also has a lot to do with the international community upholding the arrest warrants. But it could definitely create issues for anyone that receives one of those warrants traveling abroad.
But when you say receiving a warrant, you're talking about an individual, are you?
Yeah. So, for example, if Netanyahu was given a warrant by the ICC, then it's essentially like a warrant from the New South Wales Police. You are being deemed a criminal and have to go to the Hague to answer for your crimes. And you can be detained by under a Interpol red flag and then held and taken to the Hague.
But would these warrants be issued once the court had decided on whether Israel has breached the laws of engagement, the laws of engagement in war, or would this just be you have there have been serious allegations about you. We're yet to reach a verdict, but we want you to answer questions in our investigation. Would a warrant come early, or would a warrant only come at the end of the case?
So there's got to be reasonable grounds for conviction. They can't just, which is why they take it so seriously. Essentially, when these are brought to the ICC, you've got to have like a burden of proof. And so when the ICC issue the warrant, they've essentially found you guilty. It's just, like any criminal process, you did get right a reply. Problem is, no one at the international level, like Putin's not going to turn up to the Hague to defend himself. The ICC issued 3 warrants against the perpetrators of the MH17 attack in Ukraine, for example. The Russians aren't going to give them up and send them to the Hague to face trial.
No.
So it's a damning thing on an international stage. For example, he couldn't go to the UN in New York, then he would probably be arrested.
And so, therefore, the gathering of information would be going on as we speak right now, right? So war crimes would be assessed as we speak.
Yeah, this goes back to 2014. So it's not just what's taken place recently.
Uh-huh.
I'm actually saying that this the number of atrocities goes back to from around 2014, that it's the way the Israelis have conducted their operations previously and currently, that they just, indiscriminately bomb apartment blocks, killing civilians. And they're saying that's the main charge against Netanyahu and the cabinet, that they're indiscriminately killing civilians, you know, taking out 30 people or an apartment block in a civilian area to potentially kill one Hamas leader.
Okay. I want to talk about something closer to home. Domestic violence leave grants, they were announced yesterday, something like $924 million in leave grants to try and give those who want to flee a violent situation at home access to them. We've had rallies Australia-wide last weekend about violence against women. Are blokes copping a bad rap here, do you think?
1,000%. I can not only speak from a personal perspective, but I counsel a number of father veterans that are victims of not only coercion and domestic violence, but are being domestic violence and AVOs are being used against them as weapons in the family court.
Yeah, right.
So you're going through a divorce, you're in the family court, there's a bit of animosity between the parties, and the women are being actively told to by their solicitors to go to the police, make a domestic violence accusation, and then therefore the family court removes your parental rights. Mm. This happens on a daily basis in the family court.
Because AVOs can be issued, and they are frequently issued without any evidence presented apart from what one side of the party says.
I'll give you an example. One of the guys that I counsel, the police knocked on his door and said, "We have a report that you walked past your kid's school 2 days ago." And he said, "It's 700 metres up the road on my street." And he said, "And so what? Well, your ex-wife has contacted us and said that she fears that you're going to take your children from that school and take them away." And he said, "Did my ex-wife see me?" "No, no, no, she was told about it." And he goes, "So hang on, she's come to you saying that someone told her that I walked up my street, which was near our kid's school, and now you're knocking on my door with an AVO saying that I can't go up my street." And they said,
"Totally unfair."
Yep. And this is, I've got 30 of these easy, you know, and I'm trying to see the Premier about it, because like when you lose your parental rights as a father, you have no access. I know fathers that haven't seen their kids for 3 years, don't know what school they go to, don't have any access to them, because even after the criminal system, so the district court, has not only found them not guilty of any charges, didn't issue an AVO, but actually apologised to the father because the mother made malicious and inaccurate comments, and the family court doesn't adjust it.
Mm.
So how do you fight that? It is all. I have one more, Chris. I have another guy that I counsel who went into a police station and said, "I've just been harassed by my ex-wife. She's threatening to have me charged and thrown in jail. I want an AVO on her." They said, "Nope, get out of the police station. We don't do that for men."
We don't do that for men. Now, there's no stipulation under an AVO legislation that it should only be for women.
He solicitor is an ex-former police prosecutor. They got the legislation out, and it says clearly for AVOs in New South Wales, harassment is part of an AVO, and the police said we don't do that for men. And that is now before the Law Enforcement Commission.
Yeah.
This is what men face. So, hey, no one defends women more than me. I went to war to defend civilians, and so did these fellow veterans, right? But we're not even given an even chance. And I've worked in the justice system, right? If you take out repeat offenders and Indigenous domestic violence, the statistics are completely different. And I think that's not what's being discussed.
No, right? Well, the other 97% of the population, men I'm talking about, are being really bad-mouthed as a particular gender in this debate.
Yeah, and what are we teaching out? I've got three young boys. What are we teaching them? Where's chivalry gone? Because it's out the window now, because they're so scared between consent laws and that they can just be accused of anything and not believed.
Mm. Mm. What are your thoughts on what the opposition in New South Wales has suggested? That is, if you've got form for breaching an AVO, if you've got form for committing an act of domestic violence, and there are further accusations against you, you should wear a monitoring device?
So, again, this is what the statistics back up. If you've been found guilty in a court of law of violence against your partner or a woman, and then you have that AVO and you breach that for stalking, or I hate to say it, but if you look at the Michael Slater case, 100% women need to be protected. But that is that 2% that you talk about, Chris, that repeat offender. But all those repeated attacks get lumped into the overall statistics. So it makes every man look bad.
And where is the politician, or where is the person within this sector coming out publicly and saying, hey, how about we find out a really clever way of stopping domestic violence in an Indigenous context? No one is saying that whatsoever.
No, we've had that discussion. I think one of our first discussions was about that, you know, and as an Indigenous man and growing up in that environment, you know, I lived it as a kid. So I spoke about suggestions for fixing it in Alice Springs. You take those statistics separately and it's a completely different thing, but they don't do that because it doesn't help those pushing that agenda that men are bad and men are evil. Well, hang on. Like, the majority of men are the ones that have died in warfare. Men go and defend women, defend our country. Like, it's not a black and white issue. Each case needs to be heard on its merits. Like I said, it is used as a tool where solicitors will tell the wives in the family court, just go get an AVO and you'll win your case.
Yeah. You've been very frank about all of this. Thank you very much, Shane, and thank you very much for your insight in terms of what's occurring in Gaza at the moment. It seems like a remote chance that there will be a ceasefire, but we'll keep monitoring it. And we'll catch up with you next week for an update on all of these issues. Thank you, mate.
Take care, Chris. Thank you.
Appreciate that. ADF, former intelligence officer Shane Healy. There you go. This is the debate. You know, he was speaking about things that are probably too politically incorrect to enunciate in the public forum, although he's brave enough to say it here. And this is, of course, a great forum to be brave enough to say anything. But we don't hear any of those conversations. There is no one on a pulpit or a stage at the moment saying with a microphone, we want to stop women being violently maimed. We want to stop them being killed in domestic circumstances. And what we're going to do first is to go to where most of this violence occurs, which is in Indigenous communities. And this is how we're going to do it. Because that would be the most intelligent way to bring it undone, to actually reduce crime and reduce deaths amongst women in Australia. No one's talking about it. It's almost too close to the bone to speak about. And so if you think you're going to have a leave grant project of $924 million that will come to some kind of magic solution for domestic violence, you're joking. We need to take a break for news. We'll do that, get an update for you right here on TNT.
Okay, everybody listen up.
Big news.
Real big news.
Here we go.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with your TNT headlines. US President Joe Biden's plan to resettle Palestinians from Gaza in the United States has lit a match among Republicans.
Your towns and villages will now be accepting people from Gaza.
Dozens of Western tanks and armoured vehicles captured by Russian troops in Ukraine have gone on display in Moscow. And the UK has started detaining migrants in preparation for them to be removed from the country under the government's new immigration policy.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
A little bit later in the program, I do want to tell you about what Daniel Radcliffe had to say about J.K. Rowling. He's gone on some kind of crusade against J.K. Rowling. And at the end of the day, if it weren't for J.K. Rowling, Radcliffe wouldn't have the multiple million dollars he has had from his starring role as Harry Potter. And yet he wants to crucify J.K. Rowling simply because she's stating a fact, which is that trans women are biological men. That is the fact, the biological fact. It can't change because someone feels as if they want to be someone else. That is all she's ever been saying. She's not crucifying transgender individuals. She's saying that their entitlement for things that are that belong to biological women have stepped over the line. That's the point she's been making. But Radcliffe wants to take her apart. I think he needs to think about why he's been as successful as he had, I should say, not as he is, and maybe give her a little bit of a break. Now, Australia's eSafety Commissioner Julie Inman-Grant claims to be empowering all Australians to have safer, more positive experiences online. Empowering? She's the one with all the power. My next guest has not experienced this at all and has evidence that someone with the title of business strategist at the eSafety Commissioner had searched his wife's LinkedIn profile. How much is this Big Brother approach occurring to you and across Australia? He'll explain why this case is so extraordinary. Nathan Livingston is a freelance filmmaker, video editor, and founder of Milk Bar TV. In 2021, Nathan was fired from his job as a forklift driver because of vaccine mandates, and he started creating videos pointing out the hypocrisy, corruption, and overall tyranny of the COVID response. By 2023, the videos have amassed tens of millions of views. Nathan Livingston, welcome to TNT.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Good to have you on the program. Firstly, how did you get a start? How did you kick off Milk Bar TV?
Well, I had a background in independent filmmaking and then just to pay the bills, I was a forklift driver. And so it just happened that when I lost my job because of vaccine mandates, you know, I'd never made any political videos, but I just had, you know, all this experience and tools that I was able to then utilize it and then aim it at our government and, you know, start to make these satirical videos. And people just really took to them. And they've just kept getting more and more views ever since.
And so just because you've got a lot of views, how do you monetize that?
I freelance, so I'm actually kind of helping with some politicians with some of their messaging, and I'm working with some other media companies, and then the Twitter as well is monetized, so I get a little bit of change from that.
Now, why would the eSafety Commissioner be so interested in you or your wife?
Yeah, I mean, it seems innocuous enough, the idea that my wife would have a search on her LinkedIn. This was someone who works in the eSafety Commissioner office. And I think it's important to point out that my wife doesn't share my last name on LinkedIn. She's not active on LinkedIn. She's a stay-at-home mum, and she hasn't actually worked in a while, and she doesn't really have any experience that would call for someone from the eSafety Commissioner to try and recruit her. In fact, when she goes on her profile, she's only had one search in the recent history, and that's from someone from the eSafety Commissioner. The only reasonable explanation I've come up with, and anyone else has offered, is because of her connection to me and my activities online, where I've been questioning and criticizing the eSafety office.
Oh, you've been very critical of the eSafety office. We should join the same club. So if that is the case, how easy would it be for someone in that office to trace who your wife is?
I think that's the important thing to point out. The only way that I can understand that someone would be able to have that information to even look up her profile is if they work in the eSafety Commission and they already have access to that information. And LinkedIn is unique in that it keeps track of who searches profiles.
Yeah.
So it only invites more questions about where else they've looked online that doesn't keep track. That only kind of draws that conclusion that it's because of me and my activity that someone in the office has been, keeping tabs and searching her.
Could the Australian Communications and Media Authority explain why the eSafety Commissioner has taken to searching information about your wife?
Yeah, so when I found out that they had searched her, we wrote a formal complaint and we CC'd the eSafety Commissioner and we sent that to ACMA because the eSafety Commission is associated with ACMA. We got a response pretty quickly from ACMA saying they had nothing to do with the Safety Commission, really, like in terms of what they're doing in that office, and that we should email the Safety Commission directly. And it turns out when you go on the Safety Commissioner website, it's very easy to make complaints on there, but it's very hard to make complaints about the Safety Commissioner on there.
Funny
it's actually,
that.
It's actually hard to find a specific email or avenue where you can make a complaint about them snooping on you.
Isn't that interesting? So who in particular do you know looked at your wife's profile on LinkedIn?
So we know it's someone with the role of business strategist and that they work in the eSafety Commission.
Business strategist?
Yeah.
Well, that might appear odd to you, does it?
It does. Yeah, it does. It does.
It appears odd.
And you have to ask yourself, was it incompetence? Were they unaware that LinkedIn was keeping track? Was it laziness or was it malice? Were they attempting for us to actually, be able to see that we're being searched?
So what's happened with your attempts to contact the eSafety Commissioner's office and ask for an explanation?
So I've heard nothing yet from the eSafety Commission, and I emailed them directly, and I also published our formal complaint, and so I put that on Twitter, and that's got 250,000 views on there. So that has been seen by a lot of people, and so far nothing from the eSafety Commission, nothing at all.
So if it was a mistake, or if it was genuinely not a strategy to look for your wife and had no connection with you, I think it would have been easy to explain, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So therefore, they should have explained it if it was that easy to explain. What I'm saying is they're obviously hiding something because they won't give you an answer.
Yeah, I mean, it would be easy enough for them to come out and say, do you know what? Your wife actually, 5 years ago worked in this position, and we were simply recruiting, that there. And it would make me look like a conspiracy theorist and alarmist, and, it would quickly go away. But they haven't. We've launched FOI, and we've got the support of multiple politicians who said they're going to directly ask the office and even maybe bring it up in our Senate hearings as well with the
Excellent.
Commissioner.
Excellent. That's fantastic. Julie Inman Grant, if you are listening or watching TNT Radio, just give us a call on our talkback number from Australia. It's 1-800-670-310 and explain it to us. If it's that simple, you would know about it by now after the kerfuffle. So just explain why that would be the case. The Australian government is doubling down on all of this censorship, which is emanating at the moment from the eSafety Commissioner's office. I want to play you something. Here's what Minister for Communications Michelle Rowland said at a press conference with the Prime Minister yesterday.
The reality is that digital platforms are influencing our culture and our social lives. They have a fundamental responsibility to step up and do more. The content that digital platforms service through algorithms and recommender systems, particularly to young Australians, has an impact in reinforcing harmful and outdated gender norms. While digital platforms may not be creating the content themselves, they play a major role in determining much of what people see. We must ensure that our community standards are respected online as well as offline. We need a multi-pronged approach to help support a healthier online environment for children and all Australians.
Nathan Livingstone, is there anything legitimate about what the government is saying or trying to do?
If what they're trying to do is protect women from violence, I think that's a good motivation. How they're going about it, I don't think is in any way good. I just see them as exploiting tragedy to further expand their powers. And they're pretty much escaping accountability. And they're more interested in increasing their own power than, say, even empowering Australian citizens themselves.
The whole idea that you can take things down on the internet and that you can take them down on an international basis steps over the line big time, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's terrifying. We've seen that where the eSafety Commission was started to keep kids safe online. And then it's only expanded more and more since then, where we've seen it actually be an arm for trans activism, to then actually attempt to take down footage of Islamic terrorism. You know, it's gone from trying to kind of parent kids and parent our kids to parent Australians to now attempting to, you know, censor the entire world. It's crazy. It's Bond villain type levels of power drunkenness.
Yeah, you see, at the end of the day, we are adults. Surely in a democratic society, we have a choice about what we click onto to watch and what we stop. If you don't want to see something, you press stop, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but I also think it's fundamentally not the role of the government to say what our children can and can't see. That's our role as parents.
Yeah.
And I think that's very dangerous when you start to give over the role of parenting to the government, because they will take that role, as we've seen with public schools and with curriculums, and they'll run with that. And what they'll do is they'll end up trying to keep kids safe from us, the parents, when we start to try and bring them up in ways that the government doesn't actually agree with.
Well, look what's happening in the United States now. We've got states in the United States that have deemed it okay for schools not to tell parents about the wishes that their children have to change gender. My God, talk about turning things upside down.
You don't even need to look to the States. You can just look to Australia. You know, I mean, Michelle Rollins is talking about outdated gender norms. I don't know what she's talking about. We're all against violence against women. And I don't think that was ever a norm in our society. But their outdated gender norms that they seem to be trying to push is exactly that, you know, men can be women and women can be men. And in Australia, it's perfectly legal for 8-year-olds to be put on puberty blockers. It's perfectly legal for 15-year-old girls to be able to chop off their breasts and change gender. Is this the kind of gender norms that she's talking about that are outdated, the ones that you stand against if you say that's wrong?
Yeah, ridiculous. The other thing that scares me is a comment that I heard from the Prime Minister. Anthony Albanese said today that it's not free speech to promote hatred and violence and misogyny. This is all very subjective, all very poorly defined, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Again, who is determining this? And again, it's this thing, it just shows you, you know, it was just a couple of weeks ago, it was Islamic terrorism that wasn't safe and that we weren't allowed to see. Now, apparently, it's discussions to do with gender norms and gender roles. It just shows that the government's exploiting any crisis they can and attempting to run with it enact these overreaching, sweeping censorship regulations.
And the more PC a government is, like a Labor government, for instance, the more things will be PC washed in front of our eyes.
Yeah, you know, I it still blows my mind, and we still haven't got any real answers. You know, the idea of that bishop stabbing, that seems to have really been the catalyst for them to enact these sweeping regulations. And again, when you just stop to think about that footage, you know, what do you see? You don't see any blood.
No.
You don't see any gore. The victim survived. The victim came out and forgave the attacker, and the victim themselves said that the footage should stay online.
Yes.
Now, apparently this is the catalyst that apparently we need to crack down. And I think it really shows that the government, if they could, they probably would prevent that from even being broadcast. Yeah. They'll say that otherwise, but I think they're afraid of retaliation. I think they thought that there would be, you know, these massive kind of race wars or something. And it shows, no, Australia is a peaceful and tolerant country. And we're adults. We're able to look at this stuff and to be able to have conversations.
I've seen punch-ups on sporting fields 100 times more violent than that so-called violent video at Wakeley 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, and you know, it's still available on YouTube. You know, it's still available. You can still see it on news platforms. It's only social media. It seems to be only this kind of new technology that the government hasn't quite been able to regulate and to be able to control, and that people have the power to be able to kind of share this footage and have open dialogue, and specifically Twitter, a freedom of speech platform. That seems to be the one that they're, you know, particularly obsessed with.
And then hanging over us all like a terrible black cloud is this misinformation and disinformation bill, which seems to be supported by all parties. All parties. We don't have an opposition in this country.
No. It's terrifying. I mean, Peter Dutton, he's a copper and he's still acting like a copper. You know, he's not acting like a opposition or a conservative or a center-right leader.
Good point. He's acting like a copper. He should remember he is the opposition leader in this country and he shouldn't be teaming up and getting into bed with Greens. All right, Nathan Livingston, fantastic to have you on the program and all the very best with Milk Bar TV.
Thank you very much for having me, Chris.
No problem. Nathan Livingston, freelance filmmaker, video editor, and founder of Milk Bar TV. If it's easy to explain what happened to his wife, why doesn't E-Safety Commissioner, supposedly he's very transparent and trying to protect us all, has our futures in keeping, why doesn't she come out publicly and say it very, very transparently, this is why this occurred? But no, nothing from them and nothing from ACMA. And together, the eSafety Commissioner and ACMA is a dread against free speech and democracy in Australia. I'm telling you, it is a dread. Let's take a break. I've got a few things to do. I want to tell you about what the Billboard Chris is up to, the Canadian. He's in Australia right now. He's been in Victoria. And I'll play for you what he's been up to in the last 24 hours right after the break on TNT.
Hi, I'm Susan Lucci. I never thought about heart disease until I had my own heart event. At first, like so many other women out there, I ignored my symptoms. A slight pressure on my chest, shortness of breath. I thought, I don't have time to be sick. I had a 90% blockage in my main artery and a 75% blockage in the adjacent artery. I received two stents in my arteries. Stents developed through research funded by the American Heart Association. Those stents saved my life. I'm so grateful to the American Heart Association. Their research helped save my life. I can enjoy life with my children, my grandchildren, and my friends. Please, listen to your heart. The only reason I'm here today is because I did. Learn more about the American Heart Association's life-saving work at helpheart.org.
The Kids Cancer Project funds vital research into childhood cancers. And you fund the Kids Cancer Project. Funding research means giving children back their lives. And who knows what kids with cancer could grow up to do? The Kids Cancer Project. Survival starts with science. Donate now.
The Kids Cancer Project.
You're with Chris Smith on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I'll get two callers on our talkback lines in just a second. Now, Harry Potter star Daniel Radcliffe has addressed his infamous fallout with author J.K. Rowling, whose novels, of course, have made him a superstar. Rowling, whose views on transgender issues have turned into a major controversy, first faced a wave of backlash from several Harry Potter cast members when she broached the subject back in 2020. But ever since 2020, for 4 years, this cast, who can credit J.K. Rowling with their incredible success and riches, have just blasted her. Since then, her relationship with lead cast members Radcliffe, Emma Watson and Rupert Grint, who played the three stars, have gradually soured. Now, in an interview with The Atlantic, Radcliffe's now 34, revealed he hasn't spoken to Rowling in years. "It makes me really sad, ultimately," he said, "because I do not look at the person that I met, the times that we met, and the books that she wrote, and the world that she created, and all of that is to me so deeply empathetic." Radcliffe previously wrote a statement supporting the trans community for the Trevor Project in 2020. She is not stating anything but fact. If you are a transgender woman, you are a biological man. That is just biological fact. You can't change it from surgery. You can't change it from chemicals. You can't change it because you want to change it. It's a fact. And so therefore, those same individuals should not be entitled to the same accesses, and I'll speak about that in a second, as biological women. That is women's change rooms, for instance, private places for biological women, because those transgender women are biological men. They have asked to step over the line of entitlement. And what J.K. Rowling and others are doing, supporting women's rights, is basically standing up for biological women. But it's a little bit too hard for Daniel to understand. Well, the more I see of Canadian freedom warrior billboard Chris, the more he reassures my faith in the right to protest. As I mentioned yesterday, Billboard Chris is in Australia this week, and I hope to meet him at a function I'm going to on in Sydney on tomorrow night. You may have already seen his clash with some lefty university students over transgender rights. Billboard Chris is very much on the side of biological women who are doing all they can to fight back against what trans women, biological men, think they should be entitled to. Well, after that colourful clash, he's taken his loud billboard to the office of Victorian Liberal Party leader John Pesutto. So much for his critics who say he doesn't confront conservatives. He turned up to Pesutto's office yesterday and wrote on X, "I've redecorated John Pesutto's office. He's the leader of the Liberal Party in Victoria, Australia. And as a father of three girls, he's not living up to the definition of a dad." He got stuck into Pesutto for allegedly defaming Liberal MP Moira Deeming. You're probably aware that was a defamation case and it's ongoing. Over the episode, Pesutto expelled Moira from the party last year after she stood up against gender ideology. Here's what Billboard Chris recorded on camera outside the Liberal leader's office yesterday.
What's up, everybody? Billboard Chris here, standing next to a man. I wish I could call him a friend, but he's no friend to us at all because apparently he doesn't know what a woman is and he does nothing about the greatest child abuse scandal in modern medicine history, this business of trying to change the sex of children. This is John Pesutto. He's the leader of the Liberal Party in the state of Victoria, Australia. It's supposed to be a centre-right party, but it's a total disgrace because they won't say a thing about gender ideology. Anyway, last year some brave women decided to have a rally on the steps of Parliament. This rally was organized by Angie Jones and Kelly J. Keene, who had come over from England. And attending this fabulous rally was Moira Deeming, Member of Parliament. Now, that day, some crazy neo-Nazis decided to crash this party. They had nothing to do with the event, but they were down the street acting like the buffoons that they are. And then I think they came to the steps of Parliament, but it had nothing to do with this rally. Anyway, in the ensuing days, this guy decided to defame these fantastic women. He said they were associating with neo-Nazis, sympathizing with them, sharing their views, sharing the views of white supremacists. And to top it off, he expelled Moira Deeming from the Liberal Party. There's a lawsuit coming up in September. Moira Deeming is suing him for defamation. She needs your support. I encourage you to follow her on X, Moira Deeming MP, and let this guy know how you feel, because he's not living up to the definition of a dad, which is a human male who protects his kids from gender ideology.
Well said. And for someone who doesn't even live in the country, boy, does he have a full, accurate and specific understanding of the Moira Deeming case against John Pesutto. Very, very impressive. I want to go to the open line. I've got a couple of minutes left in the program. Andrew has phoned in. How did you go today at the Cenotaph and then outside of Parliament House, Andrew?
You wouldn't believe it. Mate, you and I need to have a stake, because everything you've covered in the last hour, I can talk on. I've got a daughter I haven't seen for 16 years. Seven men a day in this country are killing themselves because of this family court we've got. So why are their lives not as important as the few women who get killed? Don't get me wrong, I'm not minimising. I think anyone who raises a hand against a woman is evil.
Yeah.
But, mate, I think I met the face of evil today, Penny Sharp. She walked past us. She swung an umbrella and said, "Don't film me." She was in public. She's paid by public funds. She's a public persona.
So hang on. You were supporting the Brumbies that are being shot from a helicopter in the Kosciuszko. And why was she against you?
Because she's the Minister for Environment. She's the one signing off on this crap.
But you have every reason to protest against her view. Why is your view not important?
Oh, mate, because during COVID, we handed over our lives to the government. I didn't. I've never been vaxxed, never had COVID. But do you know what? So many Australians handed our lives over to the government. Mate, we've got to get back to the fact that we elect these people to govern for us, not govern us. You understand the difference, brother, don't you?
Yeah, so you got a few people turned up today?
We did. We had some beautiful people. Mate, I have respected you for many, many years. I gave you that award as a champion for our country, what, back in 2011, 2012?
Yeah.
I stand by that, brother. You are a voice for our nation, and we need to hear you. Thank you. Thank you for all the crap that you've gone through, all the shit that's been thrown against you, my brother. I love you, Smithy. I want to cook you the best steak you've ever had. And if I can't, I will never ring you again.
Hey, that's fantastic. And you got some people to turn up, and they actually feel that what's going on in Kosciuszko is wrong, right?
Mate, I had people from South Australia, from Queensland, from Victoria send me messages, so many messages I can't answer them.
Wow.
On Facebook. Mate, unbelievable. When is this government going to understand that they represent the people, not an international agenda to destroy our nation? This is about our heritage. This is
exactly. I'm going to do an update. I've got to go to news, Andrew, but I'm going to do an update on what's actually happening on the ground in Kosciuszko next week on the program. So make sure you keep listening. Thank you very much for all you've done today. Well done.
Thank you, mate.
Good on you. Andrew there had a big protest about what's going on, and I will give you an update on what's been going on the ground, shooting Brumbies from the air, ratified by the New South Wales government. Unbelievable. I'll leave you right now in the hands of Lempic Opic, who's taking you through, filling in for Sonia. We'll be back to do it again same time tomorrow on TNT.